We welcome you in to a Friday edition as we reach the end of the work week here. It's My Car Guru with Lenny Lawson.
Hi, Timmy.
How you doing?
I'm just glad to be here. Glad to be alive.
I'm just proud to be here. You know who said that?
No.
Minnie Pearl.
Don't you say that?
Minnie Pearl said that many times.
Was she good friends with the guy from Bull's Gap?
Archie Campbell. Yeah, they were good friends.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever do one of your shows about Archie Campbell? Did you ever interview
any
country western people?
Archie passed in 1989, I think it was, and I hadn't started doing cable country yet.
Mm-hmm.
Had he still been around, yeah, I'm sure I would have. But I interviewed him just with the news once,
mm-hmm.
and he was a very nice guy.
Were you doing cable country when Elton John came to town? Remember when Elton John came to the Liberty Bowl complex and did just he and his piano?
He's been here twice.
Oh,
is
has he?
Right?
Well, this is the first time.
First time. No, yeah. No, I didn't.
Oh, that was wonderful. I like Elton John.
Yeah.
It was just so cool to hear him just playing with no accompaniment whatsoever.
Yeah, I saw Dan Fogelberg that way one time at Freedom Hall.
Yeah.
With just a piano and a guitar.
Yeah, I think it's really neat when things like the Niswonger Performing Arts Center and some of the... You know, Niswonger has been very successful in Greenville, Tennessee, bringing in groups and singers that really not current stars, you know, mega stars aren't going to come to Greenville, Tennessee, but, you know, the has-beens.
Pretty good stars, though, have come.
Like Kenny Loggins.
Mm-hmm.
And
Restless Heart. Enjoyed
yeah,
him.
Some of these
Foreigner old, came. Yeah.
Foreigner came. That was fun.
That was good.
They actually came to the dealership. Ford was in some kind of a sponsorship with Foreigner at that time, and trying to work to improve music education. I think was their big thing.
I interviewed Kelly Hansen in your office.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
In your office.
See?
Yeah.
We just worked together so well, don't we? And my memory is not as good as yours. You know, we've been talking about pain points and pet peeves this week. We haven't talked a lot about pet peeves, but I do want to do that in segment number one. What are your greatest pet peeves when it comes to driving? With regards to the people in the other car. Okay? I'm not talking about speed limits and other things that are... that everybody has to deal with. I'm talking about that other guy. You know, the guy that doesn't know how to use a median and cross the road.
Goes to the
that
left
guy.
Instead of the right. And kind
so what are some of your pet peeves, Timmy?
Well, I think one of them is when you're at a red light and you've got three or four cars in front of you and it turns green and it just doesn't seem like they start very quickly and you're sitting there for 15 seconds or whatever it is and you're wanting to get going. And
I wonder what they're doing up there.
And I think it's a sign of the times. I don't know that that used to be the case. I think years ago when there were no entertainment centers in the car in the middle of it and there was no smartphones or anything like that, I don't think that people sat as long at a red light. I think there's more distractions.
Yeah, I think they have to update their Facebook feed.
Yeah, or whatever it may
be. You know, they've got that instant to check the text messages that they haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
Bad time to do it, though.
It is.
Leave the cell phone alone. Somebody had a great idea. Putting automatically, first thing you do when you get in the car is put your cell phone in your glove box. Put it on silent and just stick it in your glove box. And then you won't be tempted to use it.
Yeah. I think another one is when I'm behind somebody and they slow down and they turn off, but they don't use their signal when they turn off.
Yeah, you don't like that.
A lot of people around here will do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't particularly like that. I also don't like when it's pretty much dusk. It's, you know, in this time of the year that we're living in now, it would be about 6 o'clock or 6:15 or whatever it may be, and you meet a car that's coming towards you and they don't have their lights on.
Oh, yeah.
I just wonder, did they forget? Or they just, you know, or is it almost like, well, they're not going to make me wear a mask. Well, they're not going to make me turn my lights on. You know, is it that?
You know, I think when we moved to Greenville, Tennessee, that turn signals must have been a relatively new phenomenon in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Because people didn't know how to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So what they would do is that when you were getting ready to turn, or you're going down the road, and somebody in front of you is going to turn, they got their turn signal on, then you were supposed to tell the people behind you that the people in front of you we're turning.
I will still do that sometimes, but they say you're not supposed to
do that. No, you're not, Timmy.
I know.
You're not supposed to turn unless you're turn on your turn signal unless you're turning.
But there's
you fake people out.
I don't do it as much as I used to, but there was a time when I would do that almost every time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were one of those.
I was one of those, yeah.
Okay, well, you need to stop that.
I wanted to tell the person behind me, I'm not the reason that this person's taking forever to turn off. It's
that guy up
there. It's that guy up there.
But that used to frustrate my dad. That was one of his pet peeves when he would see that. And I would get so mad. Those people were supposed to turn. They turned their turn signal when they're supposed to turn.
So he didn't like that.
He didn't like that.
That's probably
I didn't know better.
Probably why you don't like it.
I just don't like it because he didn't like it.
That's what I'm saying. The apple doesn't fall very far.
Probably not. You know, the median thing is abused.
Oh,
greatly.
It's terrible. It's just horrible.
And see, it's a really big problem in Greenville because we have the 11E bypass.
Not 11E.
Not the 11E bypass, but the 11E bypass that goes has a lot of different access points where you know people can come from the side and cross the median and go the other direction. They need to eliminate some of those. But it's just some people think that the way somebody described to me, or a state trooper did, he says, Lenny, just the median, that little section between the road, is like a road.
Mm-hmm.
That is a road in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you're always supposed to go to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you come up to a median and you're in the deceleration lane, you're supposed to go all the way forward and then go to the end. And if it's not clear, if there's somebody already in there, you don't turn short. And if it's not clear, you just sit there until... Mm-hmm. You know, you can actually move up into that position, but most people don't. They don't obey that rule, especially at the PALs in Greenville.
Yeah.
But now, Greenville's not the only place. I've experienced this same problem in other areas.
Yeah. I experience it all the time.
But that is a pet peeve.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get in the way. You know, if you go to the left, you're pretty much just in the way because people can't see around you. You know, it's not good.
So how do we solve that problem?
By getting on the shows like this and yakking about it might help a little bit. I don't know.
I guess, if more people would get pulled over, but the cops are busy enough as it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have time for that kind of stuff.
Right.
I'm sure that they are ticketing some people for that behavior.
Ooh, and that makes me think of another one.
You could do a citizen's arrest.
Like Gomer on Andy Griffith, citizen's arrest.
Right.
That brought to mind another one when you said that, and that's people that ride in the left lane for miles and miles and miles.
Yeah, I had that coming up here today. There's a guy in a commercial van, and he was going 48 miles an hour.
In the left lane.
In the left lane.
Passing.
And everybody was having to go around him.
To the right. You shouldn't have to do that.
You know, one of the weapons that we use as fellow citizens is the stink eye. You know, you give somebody the stink eye when you drive by.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know how effective it is. I gave a guy a stink eye the one time for that, and he raised his hand and gave me some kind of a weird gesture.
He was
counting. He was saying number one.
You were number one.
I don't use that finger for number one.
Yeah. He was saying you were number one.
That's right. So anyway, we all have pet peeves, and they drive us crazy, but more than likely they're going to continue to behave that way. I'm sure I screw up on the road. Too.
Yeah, none of us are perfect on the road.
I look at my phone or something like that and get distracted. So I'm not innocent.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a radio show and I can talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? I talk about other people.
To a certain extent. Just don't name.
Until the hate mail comes
in. Just don't name names.
I won't.
Yeah. All right.
I'll try not. We'll take our first break and we will be back in just a minute.
And we're back. It's Friday, and it's My Car Guru heading into the last weekend of January.
I ordered a new book the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of a company called Story Brand and a guy named Donald Miller. Was it you that told me you read a book by Donald Miller once?
No, wasn't me. Wasn't me.
I'm mistaking you for somebody else.
You must be.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they recently changed the name of their company. It's now called Business Made Simple. That's the name of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And been just kind of digging into it, getting in the first chapter and talking about attributes of businesses and people who work in those businesses and how important it is to have people working in your business that are like-minded, but they don't always think like you do.
Mm-hmm.
The diversity of thought is sometimes where brilliant ideas come from.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to create the culture that allows those brilliant ideas to come to the surface. I think that's one of the brilliant things that Pal Barger and Tom Crosby at Pals did, is they figured out going into it. Of course, this is something that they learned over the process of all the other ventures and stuff that they did, but how important the ideas are of the people that work for you, and how there has to be a culture that allows those things to come to the surface. And they are, they take a great pride in their training center. You can go in and you can see this wall that has this huge plaque on it and all these brilliant ideas. And Tom pointed out several years ago to me and said, all of these ideas are things that were implemented at PALS. And they all were the ideas of people that worked at PALS.
How about that?
People that worked at the cashier and that's flipping burgers. You know, sometimes the guy flipping the burgers can have pretty interesting thoughts. Just like in my business, the guy who works in the cleanup shop. You know, we had a problem there for a period of time that the cars on in the service department, I mean, cars that were on the used car lot were not getting cleaned up to the level that, I expect and that management expects and that the whole dealership should have the right to expect. You know, if a car is sitting out there on the used car lot and it's dirty or it has some flaw, you know, that should have been fixed in the reconditioning process, that can keep that $30,000 car sitting there. And you don't have an idea why it's not sold. And 60 days later, you're thinking, okay, well, this one's got to go to the auction. All you had to do is fix that scratch on the bumper, and it may have sold. But he had an idea. He just told us that, you know, if you want these cars done better to a higher level, and you want it at the speed that you expect, so we expect 5 days from a car, the time we trade for a car to the time it hits the lot ready to sell, he says certain things are going to have to happen, and he just wrote it out on a little piece, a little notepad, and every one of them made sense. And so one of the things that, Donald Miller does is he makes these things that typically wouldn't be real evident, that you just don't think about every day, and he says those need to be at the forefront of your thought because they can transform your business from one that's just a mediocre business to something that's really special. One of the things that I found interesting, he was talking about characteristics of people. He says the top five ones, I mean, there's 10 of them that he's looking at, but there were, the five that he brought up is, number one, understand that you, as a as an employee, are an economic product. You have an intrinsic value, not to God or anything like that. I'm talking about an economic value that people are willing to pay for. Now, your value may be higher in one business than another. Your education, your ability to generate interesting ideas, all of these may have a great impact on your business, and that will increase your economic value to that business. How do you translate that? Pay.
Your paycheck, yeah.
So the second thing is be a hero and not a victim. You know, a lot of people just, they're victims. You can hear it in the way they talk and the way they speak. The way they approach issues, you know, the way they don't get engaged with other people and to solve problems. They're victims. They want somebody else to solve their problem. He talks about being a hero. Now, I'm not talking about heroic behaviors such as military, police. Don't get me wrong. I realize that a person working in a business is not a hero by that definition. But it's a concept, it's a mindset that... I guess that the hero is the opposite of a victim. It's somebody that takes control, that is proactive, that is not reactive. You know, one of the third characteristic he talks about is the importance of learning how to de-escalate drama. You know, have you ever seen drama in a business? You see drama in family relationships, and, and you see it in businesses, and some people are just really good at drama. A lot of customers think that when they come into a service department, they have to really be mad and they have to pound their fist and and really show their you-know-what to get attention. People who can de-escalate that and turn that customer from an angry customer to an advocate, that's a tremendous skill set. And that's who you want as a service advisor. That's who you want as a salesperson, as a manager. You know, you want everybody to learn the techniques that are necessary to learn how to de-escalate drama and not let it be pervasive in your business. Also, the fourth thing is the ability to accept feedback as a gift. you know, to not get defensive.
Criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to not think that just because somebody is telling you something bad about your business doesn't mean you have to get defensive. Listen. You know, appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
My dad taught me that the first thing that you do when somebody is getting ready to complain, before they even start saying it, say, I want to thank you for coming in and sharing your thoughts with me
mm-hmm.
and how I could improve my business. I mean, we don't do everything right, and maybe you can help us prevent this from happening to somebody else later on.
That in turn may de-escalate what they were going to
do. Well, yeah, it kind of takes the, you know, it takes the wind out of their sails for sure.
Yeah.
I heard that many years ago, the best thing that you can do at a customer complaint department is put a mirror up right behind the person that works the counter,
yeah.
so that people can see
mm-hmm.
what they look like when they're, you know,
mm-hmm.
out of control or
showing them
creating some drama.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth thing in there, like I say, there are 10, is know the right way to engage in conflict. Understand how the right way versus the wrong way when there is conflict. Conflict is okay. You know, when you have two people that have differing opinions about something, that's healthy. You know, because you're going to typically come up with a better solution. If everybody agrees with me all the time, I know I'm not right all the time. So if everybody agrees with me all the time, then we're just going to have a... I don't think we're going to be as successful.
A robot type existence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So understanding how to engage in conflict and how to come out with... a workable solution to whatever issue that you're dealing with. So Business Made Simple, I would recommend that you order that book if you are interested in this kind of topic, or if you are a former businessman, and or you're a consultant, or you are a small business owner.
Mm-hmm.
What is a small business owner? Is it somebody who, I think it's somebody that's independent. It can be one person.
Can be sole proprietorship.
Yeah, it could be one person just that works at a computer from home.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be a small deli or a coffee shop. Or it could be a business with 500 employees. I mean, in the world, that seems like a big business, but in the grand scheme of things, at the size of these big corporations, somebody that employs 500 people is considered a small business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these kind of books sometimes come along that I think that are they're jewels. Kind of like The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker. I think every business person, every executive needs to read that book.
Mm-hmm.
I know Bill Gates does a list of books, his top 100 business books that he says everybody needs to read. Warren Buffett, you know, the same thing. Those guys have been pretty successful, haven't
mm-hmm.
they?
Mm-hmm.
We probably ought to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
We'll take our last break.
All right, we're back here. It's the last Friday of the month, isn't it?
Yeah, we've been talking all week, Timmy, about mm-hmm. pain points and pet peeves. And, you know, pain points in businesses are, or in the car business for customers, are things like negotiation, trade values, lack of trust, just car knowledge in general, repeat repairs. These kind of things give people indigestion. One of them is credit concerns. Now, I've seen recent ads that say that, come to us and you will have credit amnesty. You heard that?
Mm-hmm.
Credit amnesty?
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of them on Facebook and stuff. This is kind of one of those things that we will put, it's kind of like we'll pay you $7,000 over book value for your trade.
Mm-hmm.
A car dealer can't give you credit amnesty. Your credit report has been developed over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've either behaved right or behaved right sometimes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know your credit score is going to give a reflection of your payment history, your credit history.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like it's really a behavioral analysis, how you handle financial matters.
Mm-hmm.
And now what a dealer can do is he can find a lender who can overlook some of your bad behaviors over time
mm-hmm.
and finance a vehicle for you at a reasonable rate. But that's not determined by the dealer. The only way a dealer can affect that is to lie on your credit application, and some dealers will do that. They will actually, if you actually make $3,500 a month and they say you make $6,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
then they are lying to the lender. The lender is basing their credit decision based on that lie, and if they ever find out, then that can actually be charged back to the dealer.
Yeah.
They can't put the customer in jail because the dealer lied about their income.
Right.
Okay. But you should look, before you sign your credit app, read it. Read what they wrote on there. If you see the income section blank, don't sign the credit app.
Mm-hmm.
So you haven't put my income in there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because what the reason they're leaving that blank is so they can manipulate that number. Isn't that awful?
It is, and that's one area where you want them to know your income. Some people are private about that, but that's one area where you want
them. But also, you know, the truth of the matter is the lender won't buy the deal if you don't have adequate income. If your debt-to-income ratio is out of whack, you're not going to be able to drive home in the car.
Right.
You know, the truth of the matter is maybe you shouldn't drive home in the car. Maybe you shouldn't take on that $750 car payment when you came into the dealership with the intention of getting a $300 car payment.
Yeah.
But you want it so badly. Say, honey, I think we can pinch pennies and not buy as much beer and pretzels. You know, and maybe we can make this work.
Mm-hmm.
Don't kid yourself. Yeah. You're not going to change your lifestyle enough to impact that.
Yeah. All right.
10-4?
10-4.
Okay.
Good buddy. All right, that'll do it for My Car Guru for this Friday and this week. And I hope everybody has a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.